Mites versus Village of Diller. And Mr. Riley, you may approach the podium. Present your argument. Again, this is Mites versus Village of Diller.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, judges. May it please the court. I will try and reserve about 2 minutes for rebuttal, but we'll see how well that works out.
All right. We don't always play nice.
Exactly. As Your Honor, you said, my name is Matt Riley. I'm an attorney at Erickson Cedarstrom, and I represent the Village of Diller in this appeal. This appeal concerns two primary governmental functions with respect, local governmental functions with respect to nuisances. First, you have the decision to abate a nuisance or to declare a nuisance, and then the second is the follow-up action to actually abate the nuisance, whether it be a demolition as we have here or any other action. The plaintiff here owns property or did own property in the Village of Diller, which is in Jefferson County. The Village of Diller proceeded with an abatement process or a nuisance process after finding that the property was indeed a nuisance and a hazard to public health. Originally, the plaintiff brought his action after the nuisance was declared and abated in the county court of Jefferson County. The county or the Village of Diller then filed a motion to dismiss in the county court on the basis that two grounds. One is that the county court lacked jurisdiction to hear part of the claim, and also that the plaintiff failed to state a claim for the remainder. The county court properly dismissed the claim pursuant to the village's motion. Mr. Mites then appealed that to the district court, which then reversed.
Can I interrupt you just a second? The county court, when it dismissed it, did it dismiss it solely on the issue of whether it was not brought properly as a petition in error, or did they also address whether it failed to state a claim?
I will concede, Your Honor, that the county court's opinion is a little, it has a little bit of gray area to it. The county court certainly did dismiss on the grounds that it lacked jurisdiction over the parts of the petition in error. What I read the county court's opinion to be is that everything flowed out of the final order that the plaintiff failed to challenge through the petition and error statutes in 25-1901. But the court also did reference the fact that there was a failure to state a claim for the takings in the eminent domain portion of the complaint. And the village's position here is that the county court lacks jurisdiction generally over the claims here with respect to, the differences I would draw here is the difference between the decision and the action. The decision here was the village board's decision on February 13, 2017 to declare that there was indeed a nuisance in need of abatement. That triggered the plaintiff's requirement to review or to seek review under petition and error statutes in 25-1901. And there are three jurisdictional requirements with respect to that. It's you have to file that within 30 days, it has to be filed in district court, and has to be labeled labeled as a petition error with the proceedings, the record of the proceedings below attached. Plaintiff didn't satisfy any of those requirements. And so the way that I read the court's opinion from the county court is by virtue of failing to do that, all these claims saying that it was a void and it was an improper exercise of jurisdiction by the village board, those all go to the wayside. And so now all the plaintiff was left with was a claim for either due process or taking or eminent domain, which he failed to state. The facts show just how long the plaintiff went without challenging this and how that created a final order within the district or within the village board. Then that also led to a proper exercise of police power. The resolution 2016D is kind of what kicked this off, and that was a resolution by the village board to declare the property a nuisance. And it identified in the resolution that there was a dilapidated structure, there was trash and debris thrown about the property, and generally it was posing a hazard to public health. That notice was served within 2 days by personal process server on Mr. Mites. He was then given an opportunity to request a hearing to show cause as to why the nuisance should not be abated. He used that right and requested a hearing, and it was originally scheduled for January 9th of 2017. At his request, he couldn't make it or whatever the conflict was. Plaintiff's counsel, Mr. Meinz's counsel, reached out and requested a continuance. The village granted that and set it for hearing at its next regular meeting on February 13th, 2017. At that meeting, despite having due notice of it, Mr. Meinz did not appear. Presented no evidence, as he was requested to do, to show cause as to why the nuisance shouldn't be abated.
So, let me interrupt you for a second.
Yes, sir.
So, assuming that he participated in that process, you have an administrative hearing, he didn't appeal it through the petition error process. Hasn't our court said that you can still state a claim under those circumstances directly, notwithstanding the prior proceeding?
No, Your Honor, not that I'm aware of, Your Honor. I think what the plaintiff has cited to, or Mr. Meinz has cited to, is one of this court's holdings in Blanchard versus City of Ralston. Mm-hmm. And I would point out that that is inapposite to the claims here. There's no evidence at all that there was even a claim as to the propriety of the action or of the decision within the municipal board there. What I understand the rule to be is that once that decision has 30, once the 30 days have passed and the plaintiff has not pursued a petition in error, that decision becomes a final order. That's the rule that was announced in Blanchard. It's been followed in other cases in this court and the Supreme Court. And once it becomes a final order, it's not subject to reversal, vacation, or modification pursuant to, as is stated in the 25-1901.
You could bring a due process claim, though, notwithstanding.
It does not. It does not dissolve. I would concede, Your Honor, it does not dissolve a due process claim. But here, the due process claim it faces an insuperable bar to relief. It cannot be brought here because what the plaintiff is entitled to under due process, and this takes with it the eminent domain case, this takes with it the takings claim as well, entitled to notice, an opportunity to be heard, and an opportunity to remediate the nuisance on their own. Notice indisputably was given here, and that's a stark contrast to what we found.
Well, he participated in the proceeding.
What's that?
He participated in the proceeding.
He did in the sense that he requested a continuance. He didn't appear at the hearing that he had notice of. But all that's required under the law for due process and for the taking eminent domain claim is an opportunity to be heard. He was indisputably given that opportunity both on January 9th and on February 13th. And the minutes of that meeting also reflect that I think that the village board waited something like 30 to 45 minutes for Mr. Meinz to appear. And when he wasn't there, the village board's minutes reflect, quote, there was no evidence presented as to why buildings on this property should not be abated. After board members reviewed photographs of property showing collapse of the back porch and boards and debris thrown about the property, end quote, the board proceeded with its vote. So it sat in the judicial capacity. It decided based on the facts that it had before it that there was a nuisance in need of abatement.
Didn't he also say in his pleading, though, that the order is void? I mean, if it's a void order, can he collaterally attack it?
No, Your Honor, the voidness, I guess, of the order would draw from a lack of jurisdiction or from exceeding the jurisdiction of the village board. And what the case law shows and the petition and error statute show is that is an exclusive remedy that can only be pursued through a petition and error. It's not a void or an ultra vires order or decision of the tribunal where it can't be rendered as such unless a petition and error is followed. And what the plaintiff has tried to pursue here is to say that this is a subject to an injunction or declaratory relief. But clearly an injunction or declaratory relief cannot issue where we have a situation where what they seek to be undone or prevented has already occurred. And so with that, Your Honor, I would ask that I concede the, or not concede, but retain the rest of my time for a rebuttal.
Thank you. Mr. Barber.
Members of the court, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
My name is Terry Barber. I represent Mr. Meinz in this matter. And I appreciate the opportunity to appear here this morning. Simply put, Mr. Meinz believes that Judge Johnson got it right on all three points. She decided as the court is aware, she decided, first of all, that under Blanchard, Judge Welch, as you were discussing with Mr. Riley, both this court and the Supreme Court has recognized that there is either what you would call an exception to or a supplement to the petition and error methodology in cases such as this, by means of what I will call a Blanchard-style action to upset or attack a decision such as the Village of Dillard made in this case.
So in Blanchard, it was an inverse condemnation case, correct?
Yes, it was.
And didn't this court and the Supreme Court resolve that issue basically by looking at the due process that was afforded to Mrs. Blanchard?
That's correct.
So if we look at the due process aspect of this, with your client being provided an opportunity to be heard and not taking advantage of that opportunity, how do we resolve it in the same manner as the Blanchard case?
Well, I think that one of the things that Judge Johnson saw in the case relates to your question, Judge. The due process aspect has two elements to it. One is, of course, the opportunity to be heard. The other is the opportunity to receive a specification that is sufficient for, and this was a big question in Blanchard, sufficient for the property owner to understand what it was that needed to be done. So it's kind of like a procedural and a little bit of a substance twist on it as well. And one of the things as Mr. Riley was reciting what the village discussed, the discussion was about it was dilapidated. The porch was dilapidated. Well, that's a little fuzzy, shall we say, and I think that is something that helps land this case within the borders of Blanchard, whether you look at this court's decision or the subsequent PFR that was decided in the Supreme's decision.
Did your client have the opportunity to flesh out that issue with the village board?
Well, Judge, one of the things that Judge Johnson also talked about was the difficulty that arose because of the way that the motion to dismiss was managed in the county court. She had some criticism as to it being converted or not to a summary judgment motion, and what there may or may not be in additional information that would have responded. For instance, Mr. Mines had been doing repairs on the house. Mr. Mines was not specifically aware of what the village was up to in terms of criticizing the place. And Mr. Mines having an understanding that so long as he was working on this house to repair, and he understood that the only problem was the back porch, that as long as he was making his repairs and making progress, that that what was done wouldn't be done. So, but in the management of the case, there was not an opportunity to get all of that spread out. We understood that it was a motion to dismiss that was being done. And under those circumstances, it was not clear that responsive evidence, if what the village was asking was to take judicial notice of some public documents, that's one thing. But the way it ended up being managed was a summary judgment type of process. And I think if you take a look at Judge Bauer's alter and amend order, which was her March order, she refers back in paragraphs 3 and 4 of that order to the earlier proceedings in a manner that make it relatively clear that she managed that motion as a summary judgment, because she was critical of Mines' not coming up with evidence to support the point that you made, Judge Welch, which is the voidness of the proceedings.
Before we go there, though, stay with, if there is an opening for a due process challenge, when you have an administrative proceeding, which, by the way, would you acknowledge you participated, your client participated in the administrative proceeding that was not appealed? You agree with that?
I agree that he didn't show up at the February hearing.
Okay, yes. So he was involved and it didn't show up.
And that on his behalf, I did request that January hearing not occur. Yes.
Okay, and then there was no appeal of it through the petition and error process.
That's correct.
So then if there's an opening, which is a due process challenge, I'm still not following, where's the due process challenge here in your complaint? What are you saying on due process grounds? How are you challenging this?
Well, the challenge is in one of the later paragraphs, there's reference made to the decisions of the board being void.
On what ground? How is it void?
It's void in lack of specification of what the nuisance consists of. In other words, what needs to be fixed and an opportunity to do that.
How would that render that order void?
Well, in order for the proceeding to take place at all and to be meaningful in the way that it proceeds, the property owner needs to be notified of, for lack of a better term, what the charge is. And I think that was one of the things that was at the heart of both of the Blanchard decisions. Well, the Blanchard was just one case, but at the heart of that was the court's discussion of there not being given any specification of what are the deficiencies. What does this property owner need to do?
You're not arguing there was lack of subject matter jurisdiction, are you, in the original proceeding?
No. What I am arguing is that the Blanchard remedy is either an exception to the petition and error requirement or a supplement to the petition and error methodology. I certainly think that the county court in Jefferson County had subject matter jurisdiction for the Mites' claims. Does that answer?
I'm talking about the administrative proceeding. So the administrative proceeding is the one that you'd be attacking on the basis that it was void.
Yes.
But if there was subject matter jurisdiction there, then it's not void. You just want to challenge what you could have challenged in that proceeding. True?
Well, it may be terminology here that's getting my goat, but if a specification of what's wrong is not given and a meaningful opportunity to respond to that specification is not given, I suspect that that could be regarded as a lack of jurisdiction in the village. But in terms of the constitutional takings claim, for instance, I don't know that it's a matter necessarily of jurisdiction. It's a matter of the provisions of the Constitution and its due process requirements. But it would, as a functional matter, you know, form and function, as a functional matter, it would be a jurisdictional question, I suppose.
I think I understand your position.
Okay, very good. But again, as I said, we take the position that Judge Johnson had it right on all three points. First of all, as to the application or the availability of a Blanchard remedy, I think she pointed out a substantial defect in terms of the way the motion was managed as a summary judgment as opposed to a motion to dismiss. And I think that the complaint was adequate.
Mr. Barber, I have just one other question. Your interpretation of the county court order, was it that the county court granted the motion to dismiss based upon lack of jurisdiction because there was no petition and error, or was it a combination of that and the failure to state a claim?
My reading of the January order, the first order that Judge Bauer wrote, was that that was a decision that the only remedy was by way of petition and error. I filed a motion to alter remand. If you take a look at the March order, she goes a little bit further, and her criticism then is that there was no evidence provided responsive to the public record. And so it rolled then more into also being a consideration either of the 12B6 motion as a dismissal motion or summary judgment, depending on how you connect those dots.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Barber. How far over did we take, Mr. Barber?
1:03, Your Honor.
All right. Please add that to Mr. Riley's rebuttal time. All right, Mr. Ryan.
Thank you, Judge. Your Honors, I wanted to address a couple points here in rebuttal that Mr. Barber raised. First, as to the evidentiary argument, when the parties were in the county court, the plaintiff was given an opportunity to object, and the plaintiff did not. And in fact, Mr. Barber conceded that this was all appropriate to be considered on a motion to dismiss. Second, the rules require that evidence only be subject to conversion on a motion for summary judgment if it's only under 12B6. This is a 12B1 and 12B6 motion. So therefore, the village would contend that doesn't even apply in this case. But having waived any argument as to the propriety of the evidence, it seems a little late in the game to now be saying that it should have been converted. But, Your Honor, I wanted to touch, Judge Welch, on the due process argument that you were pursuing with Mr. Barber. The due process here, what the plaintiff seems to be contending about is this lack of sufficient notice, I guess, or somewhat, I think, was termed a fuzziness in the notice. That is all a pre-decision issue. If the plaintiff had an issue with what happened before the village board reached its decision on the nuisance declaration, the opportunity to bring that dispute was in a petition and error. But the plaintiff didn't do that. The plaintiff never raised any issue with the due process or any other notice provision within the village board's proceedings or in a petition and error. Those arguments are all out the window. So the only thing then that comes into play is the due process or taking or eminent domain claim after the fact, after the decision. And that all falls into the same line of thought, in which is, I'm out of time, if I could finish this thought and conclude or answer
your question.
In Grayek versus Village of Overton, which is a 2019 decision of this court, the statement was, so long as the village provided the landowner with due process before abating the nuisance, the village will not be liable for an unlawful conversion or taking. That's the rule that should apply here. There is no Blanchard exception. There certainly isn't one for this type of case. So with that, Your Honors, the village would request that this court reverse the district court and reinstate the dismissal granted by the county court. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Riley. All right. The case will be...